a part of the brain being uneasy because in the background, there's a sense of danger that is irrational, right? The brain is saying, I'm in danger. I'm in no danger, but my brain doesn't understand it, so you're reacting.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. Now, we don't want you to worry about taking too many notes, so you can join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club, and we'll send you the transcripts and show notes from every episode. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and as always, it's my honor and pleasure to be with you here on another brand new episode. And we have a really awesome guest and an amazing topic. I think it's such a timely topic. I know. We all made it out of 2020, right?
Yes.
Wow. Talk about chaos and fear and anxiety and everything. And that's what we're talking about tonight with a expert. Her name is Terry Smith Pickens, and she is the author of the just released book called The Irrational Fear Cure. Terry, I know you have a little bit of history, personal history around irrational fears and anxiety. So tell us a little bit about your story and why this book.
Well, Sharon, I just in the late teenage years into that early college, I suffered depression. And it seemed that it didn't matter how great things are going. I always went back to this place. I call it like a place of darkness. So I knew something was going on with me. I had been in therapy and I just never found relief. And I was working in an immense prison, and certain experiences brought me to a place where I wanted to research what was going on with people. I saw similar symptoms, people can't sleep, using food to comfort ourselves. And in doing that research, I had what I call an epiphany. And what it was, I was driving one day and it was like a download in my brain where information was just being poured on me. And at first I didn't take it seriously, but by day two, I got a pen and paper. And it continued for over a year with information that was not within the purview of my knowledge base. So in taking that, I was able to work on me. I kind of had a sense that that depression had to do with fear, but I couldn't be certain. And so I just called out to God, and I would wake up in what I call impending doom. It's that sense that you wake up from the sound, beautiful sleep, and it's like the shoe is going to fall. Just something is going to go wrong. And it was really, my heart would just start beating like a panic attack. Wow. And I just cried out one day and just felt a stillness come over me. I cried out to God, felt a stillness come over me. And I stayed with listening to the epiphany, reading it. I had to experience all the symptoms. And in that process or that journey, I was able to cure myself. For example, food was a comfort for me. And I learned what to do when I feel stressed. Instead of eating, there are certain things I do. And I learned to get my mood stable where I don't allow it to drop to that point where I'm depressed. So over the course of years, I was able to fix me and ultimately fix the clients I was working with. And I was speaking in certain churches and other places and help mainly women and some men to reach that place of the fear cure and four miraculous steps, which is the subtitle of the book.
Wow. What an amazing story. Now, I know for the book, you've interviewed and more than 200 people about their experiences with irrational fears. What are some of the patterns that you saw in all of those interviews?
Right, so besides the interview, I work as a psychotherapist, so I also see it with clients. Sleep is number one. It's a polarity. Either you can sleep or you just can't sleep. And even those of us who sleep, we wake up. It's not the peaceful 8-9 hour sleep. It's you get a little sleep, you wake up, you go back. But there are many people who just can't get to sleep, go to work, or people who work 2 days back to back just so that they can have what I call the dead sleep. When you're that dead tired and you're just out cold. And that I saw that as a pattern. And at cocktail parties, we talk about over-the-counter sleep aids and the whole room would circle around where everybody had a name and knew and could tell you what they take and realize they were not alone. The whole room had issues with sleep.
Wow. Wow. So what are some things that you tell your clients that can help them get to sleep, I'll say without aids? Are there some tips and tricks that you've learned that help people relax?
It's not as easy as that, simply because the concept of fear is that we're living in survival mode, which started in childhood. And survival mode is a mode of danger. So when you try to sleep, your brain is feeling that sense of danger. So this is why the aid helps for you to really get rid of it. You have to kind of back up and take the 4 steps in the book, which is a lot of us, for whatever reason, we don't like to talk about being sick, or we don't like to talk about the issues that we're facing behind closed door. So the more you can't talk about it, the more you stay in that mode and need your sleeping pills. Wow. The real key is to talk about it and realize that you're not alone.
Mm. So let's dive right in with the step number one in your process. What is the first step to overcoming irrational fear? Well, first, let's describe what is an irrational fear. I mean, sometimes people are like, well, I'm afraid of dogs, but I was bitten by a dog. Is that irrational?
No. So here's the difference. We could use COVID-19. COVID-19 is rational. You can get sick. It's a virus. The doctors know it. But it becomes irrational on the way that you view it. So for me, if that's superimposed on me already being in fear, I would look at COVID-19 as irrational when I think that everybody in my neighborhood has it. And I look at the windows and I think the windows have it. It just means that my fear has gone way overboard, out of line. So you take the little rational, which is like having the flu, having a cold. And when you have a cold, you sneeze, you feel bad, you go to bed. But when it becomes irrational, you take action that make absolutely no sense. Mm. Where the things that you're fearing, the things that you're living, you're going and buying all the paper in the supermarket, including toilet paper that has nothing to do with the virus. So the behaviors become irrational. I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes sense. But I also beginning to think that I know some of those people in my world. I do.
Of course, we all do.
What I'm noticing is they're rationalizing what I would say was irrational. They're saying, but there was a toilet paper shortage and I don't want to be caught without it again. Or they're rationalizing. How can someone who maybe is on the outside looking in, is there anything that we could do to help someone see that there's kind of a line that's been crossed?
Yes, you could, for instance, say, you could question yourself, what would happen if I didn't buy, or I could use what I have until it's finished? Because for it to be rational, then your answer would be, when it's finished, I may go to the supermarket and they will not have any. So that's irrational, but you need to kind of keep it narrow, stay in the moment. So in the moment, do I have 6 rolls of towels at home? That's enough. For me personally, since March, I have not shopped. I'm still using stuff I had the year before when you buy the large packets. you don't have to go with the madness. You could kind of take a breath and step back from it. And I'm not saying it's easy, but what's really happening, it's not the virus that you're fearing. Your mind is already imagining all kinds of legs and fingers and hands growing from the virus, which is not rational.
Right.
You're imagining more than reality presents itself.
And I can understand that, but sometimes I've just noticed, even with myself, when I've had to talk myself back from some fear where I go, well, that doesn't make sense. That fear really doesn't make sense. But I'm telling you, Terry, it feels like it makes sense.
Absolutely. And the reason it feels like it makes sense, you are still stuck in your childhood brain. Survival mode comes from what happened to us in childhood. And you have to remember, in childhood, you're in your primal brain. What does that mean? It means you have no capacity for reasoning. So it's kind of, I could bring it to you in the form of your dog. Do you have pets?
Not right now, but I've had them, so we can.
All right. So if you had a dog and you take something scary and go up to your dog and say, I'm just joking, how would your dog take it? Your dog would not understand the rational nature of it. Your dog would bite. Am I correct?
Right, yes.
Any threat to your animal, the animal acts on that. Well, unfortunately, that's the state we're in childhood. And unfortunately, those fears, us not being able to distinguish between what's fearful, what's going to kill us, and what's not, gets embedded in our brain, and we're living. So we're, or even our marriage, our friendship, we're living out our childhood, but it really wasn't a healthy childhood. So we go into relationship, to work, to everywhere in our world. We have this grown-up form, like we're grown-ups, but in our minds, we're still children. So our behavior tends to be irrational.
My gosh.
And it looks that bad because you're talking about multiple people. You're not talking about two friends across the hall. You're talking about millions of people in that same mode. And what it does, it makes it almost too real to think it's irrational.
I think that's what I'm noticing about the COVID and some of the other things. It was one thing on top of another in 2020, where it got to the point where you're sort of just going, what next?
Yes. Yes. And that piece is the danger, because whether you are a Christian or you have a belief, it's kind of common sense to say, remember when we were kids and you say something is going to break your mother back and you had to cancel?
Yes.
In other words, at a very early age, you learn that your thoughts are creative. But here we are now as adults, and we fail to believe that the more we fear COVID, the more we think of bad things happening, then guess what? It's going to happen. And that's where you see mutations. The worst case scenarios you can think of, you're creating. And then when you add the numbers in the creation process, you get reality. It's the equivalent of prayers, where a band of people from a church pray on something and it happened. It works in the reverse. The universe by default doesn't care or doesn't understand good from bad. It gives you, you know, as the movie The Secret says, your wish is my command. So the more bad things you're thinking, you're creating them. And of course, you're never, never going to believe that you're doing that.
Right.
Not in a million years.
Now, I know you didn't write the Irrational Fear Cure solely about COVID, that this has been a work in progress for you.
Yes.
And that anxiety has been around forever. Now, in your book, you have this quote about 40 million adults in the U.S. age 18 and older have anxiety. When I say the word anxiety, how is that related to an irrational fear? Are they the same thing, or are they like cousins?
Okay, so it begins with the word fear. And most of us adults refuse to say we're afraid of anything, but it's that silent fear in the background. So if in your mind, Sharon, you have a fear of anything, be it I don't care what it is. It's going to trigger anxiety because the brain is reading what you're thinking. The brain reads fear, and the anxiety tells you, I have to prepare for this fear. So when we have anxiety, it's our brain preparing to protect us from something that may not even be real. So you start, go on.
The manifestation, is that what's happening? Is the fear is something in my mind that I'm thinking, but is anxiety solely the rapid heartbeat and maybe the labor, the strange breathing systems and pulling in? Is that what anxiety is, the physical manifestation?
Exactly. So once the brain picks up any kind of fear, the anxiety is what's going to trigger your fight, flight, freeze. That's the system of our survival. Mm-hmm. When we're in that system, then we can fight. We don't depend on mom or dad or the neighbor. We have the adrenaline rush, the heartbeat, the muscle, and we can face anything. Yeah, we may not succeed. We may die. But the body has a built-in system of fight, flight, freeze that starts with fear. It's triggered by anxiety, and we go in there. When it's not real, you may just feel a panic. When it's not real, you may feel like you can't sit still. When it's not real, you may just want to sit down and you're not comfortable moving. It comes in very different, weird sort of ways. But it's the experience, it's what you said, we're going through the physical result of feeling the anxiety.
I just want to back up for a minute about the idea of rational fear versus irrational fear. And obviously we know when a bus is coming at you, that's a rational fear. You better step out of the way, right?
Correct.
In your work, the interviews you've done and your psychological work, because I can look at someone and say, in my mind, well, that's an irrational fear. Mm-hmm. But as we've discussed to them, it's very, very real. When we're looking at it in the medical practitioner type of format, what is the definition difference between a rational fear and an irrational fear if the person is truly feeling fearful?
Right. Good question, Sharon. So with the rational, it might be the spider right there in front of me, and I'm afraid of spiders. So I'm going to jump on the table or get a stick and hit it. It's rational, meaning I can act on it. Mm-hmm. When things become irrational, so let's say my husband killed a spider. I come into the kitchen in the middle of the night, and my mind tells me that it's there. I am convinced it's still there. I'm now standing on the table, but it's not there. So in other words, I can't act on it because now it has one living place in my mind. Mm. If it's in my mind, my imagination goes awry. My imagination could say, no, there are three of them. Oh no, I can't get off this table because they're under it. And my mind could go on and on building that fear to where I have a panic attack, or my husband comes in and get me off the table and put me in my room and say, stay. Because the rational is out of control. Rational, you can see it. It's something in this moment, you take care of it, it's done. When it's irrational, I could wake up in the morning and still see the spider in my cup. And so you could translate that to COVID or any other situation. I'm getting a job. My mind could say they won't like me. I'm not going to answer well. And my brain takes that little piece and begin to build, 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 where by the time I get to the interview, I have a panic attack or I stand there and I cannot speak. All of that is irrational. The key really is to shut it down. It's for me, or someone I know who knows I have this, say, it's not going to happen that way. You're going to do good. And even if you don't get that job is not for you. So you need to talk yourself down or have someone talk you out of your fear.
Now, that's an interesting tactic. And we need to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Terry some more about the irrational fear cure. And some of these ways of talking ourselves down or talking our friends down. It yes. seems to be something we're all doing these days. So we'll be right back and get some really actionable tips. We'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here having an amazing discovery about irrational fear. I mean, it just seems so timely right now, doesn't it? We're talking with the author of The Fear Cure and In Four Miraculous Steps. And her name is Terry Smith Pickens. She is an award-winning and best-selling author and speaker, in addition to her work as a mental health practitioner and coach. And she's inspired and transformed many lives through her coaching, speaking, and media appearances. And Terry, this is so fascinating. And I think a lot of people will point their fingers outward and said, yes, their fears are rational, but of course mine is completely rational. Let's talk a little bit about some of your four steps that came to you. I know it came to you, what I would say, like a cosmic download or a revelation of some sort. So let's talk a little bit about the amazing parts of the four steps that your book covers.
Indeed. So the first is to come out of denial. The brain protects us from pain. Keep that in mind. So anything going back to my childhood that's going to hurt me, I am going to just shut it down. But if I, let's take autoimmune illnesses, stress creates illness in the body. And if I'm seeing a lot of things happening to me and I seem not to have control, then I have to remove that denial and kind of explore what's going on with me. That would be step number one. You really need to talk about it and not deny that your fear is call rational irrational.
I want to ask just a question about talking about it, if we could, before we jump to the second.
Sure.
Now, of course, talking to a professional such as yourself would be ideal. But let's say we're friends with someone. What are some ways that we could approach it or broach it? Or maybe they want to talk to us, but as the layperson, I don't know. Do I just look at them and say, yep, you're right, you're crazy? That doesn't seem very...
No, and you wouldn't say that. It's the same thing that I was sharing with you at the cocktail party. The moment one person says, I can't sleep, I haven't slept for days. People call it empathy or whatever. People came in and say, me too. So if your friend says that, maybe you could share something that you consider weird about yourself, mm-hmm. or that you think is irrational. Because the moment we identify, it's like the 12-step groups or Weight Watchers, the moment we identify things we have in common, we're comfortable.
Oh.
Because it's not judgment. No one is judging. So I say to you, Sharon, you know, I woke up 20 times last night. And if I got 5 minutes of sleep, I'm lucky. And if you're not a sleeper, chances are you're going to share your story with me. Wouldn't that be correct?
Oh, it would. I might tend to go towards maybe some successful night I'd had of sleeping, though, like mentioning that I'd gotten a brand new pillow, or, you know, I slept with the room much cooler the other night. And you know what? I got a little more than 5 minutes of sleep. I think I might tend to. Is that okay to come out with a
solution? So you came out with a solution. The caution I'd like to make with having the solution is, first, you have to identify a problem before you go to a solution. Because if you don't, then you're just putting on Band-Aids. It's now the bed, and eventually that's not going to work for your sleep, and you're going to go back to identifying that you're not sleeping. So it's best if you could talk about why is it you're not sleeping. That would be much better. Am I up too late? Am I drinking coffee at night? Have a discussion before you get to the solution.
Oh, good point. Excellent point. Thank you. Let's jump ahead to the second point that you were going to make before I ask that rabbit hole question.
Surrender. And surrender is really, it comes with the fear and the anxiety. The more anxiety I feel, the more I control my world. And if I control my world, we're in this interview, if I can control how you're doing it and everything else, then my anxiety remains at bay. It goes away.
That seems pretty hard to be able to control other people, is like you mentioning, not knowing what question I'm going to ask next could be very anxiety provoking in many people, unlike yourself, who's done this many times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the key is really to let go. If you look at surrender, just wanting to have control, try not to want to have control. And we see the biggest harm in doing that when we're raising children and we fail to give them a place or a sense of control of their own worlds. And we impose ourselves on their free will. But surrender is important. If you don't let go, then nothing comes in. The third one is to challenge your fears, because some of the fears, a lot of people talk about driving on a bridge if you're acrophobic, and they bend down on the floor when they get on the bridge. But you have, if you can't drive on a bridge, you want a challenge. Even if you go at 4 a.m. or you can't go up escalators, go when the store is about to close and take the first 1 or 2 steps. So all these fears you have to challenge, because some people are fearful about driving and they never learn to drive and they never drive a car. So you're closing off parts of your life when you give in to these irrational fears, mm-hmm. rather than challenge them. I know for me, it was acrophobic. I couldn't do bridge, and I do it. Now I can do it. And if you stay in the center lane, you don't get that sense that you're falling off the bridge.
Wow.
But you have to challenge it. And the last step is to come out of survival mode. Survival mode is a mode of danger. It's like you're walking and you're lost in the woods and it got dark and you hear a gun crack or something, or you hear footsteps. Just imagine what that feels like in your chest. When you live in survival mode, that's happening to you around the clock. So you want to step out of that. And to step out of that, you talk about your childhood fears, you let go of your need to control your world, and the fears that you can identify, you face them, face on, challenge them.
Now, there's many, many research studies out there that talk about the stuck traumas of earlier days and how that does play into the disease of the body, including autoimmune.
Yes.
Have found that oftentimes exploring those traumas are a good way to begin to bring some equilibrium to the physical function of the body. I find that fascinating how all these parts play into it, that many times in regular typical Western medicine, in you're going to your rheumatologist or your oncologist, whatever, rarely do they ask about, have you had any help or what's your childhood like or any of those sorts of things. How can we broach that subject? It seems like it's often overlooked to understand, why are we having these physical manifestations? Is there some anxiety or trauma in our background that could be hampering us from healing?
And I guess we have to look at medicine in a new way, because we're mind, body, spirit. And people fail to understand that what you see in the body is the last step, like the autoimmune or the tumors, and people have strange illnesses that doctors can't wrap their mind. But it's in your spirit. It's coming from the unseen world, and it has to work itself out in the body. And the moment you take care of those trauma, then that could just disappear. Or it stop happening. If you don't take care of that, then you could be a senior and still have weird stuff happening, tumors, pains, the autoimmune, the fibromyalgia, all that will continue until you do address those issues from childhood.
And we've talked about your four-step approach to irrational fears. I guess my question is, do those same steps cover things like having talks about our childhood trauma or our young adult traumas? And is there a difference between what I've had some experts talk about, as they called it, a capital T trauma versus a tiny T trauma?
No, the first step come out of denial. The concept of denial is to talk about my childhood, no matter how painful, whether it was sex abuse or corporal punishment or just shutting off my feelings, coming from a family where you're taught not to feel. Whatever it is, when you come out of denial, the concept is to talk about what you're feeling, good, bad, or ugly, and then you could move to the other steps. But if you don't, it's going to come out one way or the other.
I've had a couple of friends who tell me they don't remember their childhood, which makes me wonder, goodness sakes, what was so traumatic that the mind has closed the door?
Blocked it off.
And I'm assuming that there's ways practitioners such as yourself can help people open those doors.
Yes, that kind of amnesia that you talked about, we see it sometimes. A client could forget from birth to six. There are some that could remember before four, but from four to 10, nothing. So you don't necessarily have to open that. A lot of times client can go back to pictures or family and talk about it, but you don't really need that. The moment that happens, you know there was trauma. Mm-hmm. It's something your brain is protecting you from. So you can look around the periphery of your childhood or your life or your siblings or your cousins. You're going to see the sign somewhere. And you could just simply go with that in surrendering that my parents did the best they could, but it messed me up. And you can work from there so that you're not repeating that pattern for your children or your relationship or any other phase of your life. The key is to stop that generational passing on.
Oh, it's an interesting concept. You say stop that generational passing on. Sounds like irrational fears can be contagious then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just to give you a quick last example, if you from 0 to 12 level of anxiety, if you're a person and your anxiety is about an 11, and you come to visit me, but let's say my anxiety is a 3, once you're in the room with me, it's energy, I am going to start feeling uncomfortable, and I will not come down off of it until you leave. So if you've ever had friends or been around people who are very anxious, you become uncomfortable and you want to get away from it.
Unfortunately, it looks as if we want to get away from them, but it's really just wanting to get away from the energy in the room.
Exactly. So put that on children who can't get away. Mm. Put that on a parent who has a 12 anxiety and the child who has nowhere to run. I'll leave that with you as food for thought.
Now, you have an interesting talking point that I wanted to, since we're talking about children here, and I'm just going to quickly read it. It's all about, instead of corporations investing in mindfulness in training schools, investing in keeping children out of survival mode to eliminate ADHD and ADD. Now, I didn't realize that there was a connection between ADD and ADHD and survival mode. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay, so once you go back to fear triggers anxiety, anxiety triggers your survival mechanism. Once my survival mechanism is triggered by a fear, either I can't sit here talking to you, I'm going to have to get up every few seconds, or the ADD is just where we need mindfulness. We're multitasking. We have to do, it's all a part of the brain being uneasy because in the background, there's that sense of danger that is irrational, right? The brain is saying, I'm in danger. I'm in no danger, but my brain doesn't understand it. So you're reacting. So it's three ways. You're going to do ADHD, you're going to do ADD, or you're going to freeze. And freeze would be that friend or family you have who never leave the house. They could literally stay home for the rest of their life and not feel bad not going out.
Wow.
But for children and adults, and it starts in childhood, so you're going to see it more than in the adult. What the child who has a high level of trauma or a high level of anxiety is going to be the person who can't sit still. It's energy, as you and I just acknowledge, and they can't sit still because the feeling is something is wrong in your body. Mm. And the ADD would be the mindfulness. You can't focus on any one thing. It's a constant multitasking. You're cooking the stew before you even walk in the supermarket. The brain is always on that overdrive. And that's what survival mode is. The concept is to find a way to shut it down.
Wow. Well, time flies, Terry. We've got to take our last commercial break here. And when we come back, we'll talk with Terry Smith Pickens some more about this. I just find this whole subject fascinating, very timely for right now, because I think a lot of people after this last year, even if they would have said in 2019, met a little bit, are probably saying, yeah, most likely now.
Yes, indeed.
We'll be right back.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for inspired conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with Terry Smith Pickens, and she is the author of The Irrational Fear Cure. She is also an award-winning and best-selling author and speaker, in addition to her mental health practice. And we've been talking about irrational fears. Seems very appropriate after coming through 2020. And one of the questions I have about what I'll say a collective irrational fear going on right now is, my concern is a number of people talked to me before, like, you know, late 2020, that somehow 2021 was going to go click to the clock and poof, life would be back to normal. What are some things that we should be mindful of during this time that we don't fall into that trap of maybe even getting more anxious or more depressed when we realize not that much changed at the click of the clock?
Right. It's hard for people to believe that they're creating this virus. I'm sure someone listening to this podcast will laugh when they hear that. But it goes back to psychology. And for those of us in the field treating, we treat people's fear and anxiety to stop it. So if you're fearing COVID to that mass level, you're creating it. And whether you believe it or not, it's worth you trying to get your life to normalize. And by saying normalizing, I'm not saying not to be safe. Wear your mask, do what you need to do, but stop going overboard in creating what you think COVID is creating, because you're only making it worse. And there is something called a fear epidemic. I've not seen that in the news. We have not talked about it, but that's where we are. We're in the midst of a fear epidemic. And when you're in a fear epidemic, you're creating the thing that you fear.
Talk some more. How do we get as a collective and as an individual not play our part in this fear epidemic?
I'm guessing we may be split. If you believe in God, it's easy. If you don't, then it's like you don't have a power greater than you to lean on. But maybe even for the people who believe in God or a power greater than them, you can help your neighbors. Maybe there can be groups and you could do it Zoom or wear a mask. But talk about the fact that we could be creating this. And the more people hear that reality, they may not be thinking about it now because they're not owning it. But if you and I are sitting here having this conversation, say, you know, certain behaviors we're doing is making it worse. Maybe this is what we should do. Let's be safe, but not focus so much on COVID. Then people may listen to that because that's really what you need to do. You need to take the focus off the virus. And once you do that, it has to go. It has to go.
It's interesting you say that. I was as a participant on a Zoom call not too long ago that had a large gallery in it. You could see all the different multiple people. And one person coughed. And a large part of the gallery, you know, jumped back in their seat, rationally knowing that you cannot catch COVID over Zoom.
Yes. But there you've just described what is irrational.
Absolutely. Completely irrational. And part of that fear epidemic, everyone that I watched, not all the people jumped, but a large majority jumped back. And I'm thinking, well, that is really silly because that cough is not infecting the other people on these windows.
Yeah, but in that moment, your fear is bigger than that cough. Your whole mind is set up that something is coming at you, COVID-19 or whatever, and you're reacting. And that is the real danger.
One of the things I've thought about beyond that, which is like here now and in the moment, is when I go out for a walk in my neighborhood, people will cross the street to avoid me by 20, 30, 40 feet. Whether I know them or not.
I've seen it.
And what I find fascinating and I'm curious about is after the most danger of the actual virus has passed, after vaccines and this has passed, I'm curious how much longer a lot of people will still have this avoiding behavior, because we don't even make eye contact on the street anymore. It might be someone I know in my neighborhood and yet they cross the street to avoid me and don't look at me.
Yes. And it's demoralizing. I mean, we as human beings, one of the thing about not being animals is we touch and we kiss and we're close to people. And when you're this isolated, it's very painful. And you're right. Even if the virus stopped tomorrow, there would be people who would continue their behavior for another 6 to 8 months beyond that until they have the proof in their own mind that it's gone. It's very demoralizing to see someone cross the street or barely looking at you. To me, it took us back to the Bible and when people were lepers.
I was at the grocery store the other day, the only person in the aisle, and yet someone started to turn into the aisle and turned away when they saw that it was taken. The aisle was taken by myself. It was a little bit like, hey, I'm okay, I'll turn away, you know, you can scoot by. Yes.
So it's irrational, has put on a life of its own, but no one would call it that because it's a herd mentality. Everybody's doing what you just described. So no one finds it fearful or strange or anything like that. That is the real danger when we all, just because our neighbors are doing it, we do it without thinking. How might that person feel? Or this doesn't feel normal.
It was just strange. I mean, I felt it. I was like, I'm okay. I don't have it. You can like scooch by, but you know, they didn't know.
Me too. Yeah.
Now we're down just to the last 8 minutes. And one question that came to me as we're talking about this behavior, and I'm thinking about our young people, our children, the traumas that are happening in their mind, because we're being irrational about a lot of things going on right now. Oh my goodness, when you have, as you mentioned, the child's mind, what can we do to support the children in our world?
If I had young children, I would never under any circumstances take them into the supermarket. You need to keep your kids away from seeing too much of the mask or the fear or what people do because they're afraid, because the only thing you're doing is giving them what you fear. So I'm looking at the word protection. Protect your kids if you have a big backyard or you could take them, but don't take them to adult places. Don't take them to the doctor unless it's their appointment. Don't take them into the supermarket for any reason. Make your world sort of your own created world for their safety, because this is trauma for children that are younger than 10. I can assure you, survival mode begins because we're in primal mode, and primal brain mode means your children do not yet have the capacity to reason. And even the little thing to you is a big thing to them. So you really need to go into protection mode. Stop exposing them to too much.
That's a good point. And another thing that I'm a little bit concerned about with my grandchildren is their socialization that they're missing.
Yeah.
They're getting a little bit tired of their siblings and playing just with their siblings right now. And are there ways that we can help support them during this time of missing their friends?
Well, I've seen some virtual clients of mine where the children do Zoom, or even in the classroom, they do Zoom. But there's, Sharon, there's a flip side of this. Right before COVID, we had a large part of the population of children who had social anxiety, and they were afraid to go to school and afraid to be around people. Now it's going to be so much harder for them to ever go back into that setting. And for the children who are not suffering from social anxiety, even if it's cousins or close neighbors, there are some people that get together at the pool or each other's house. If you could just climb above your irrational fear of the people close, I'm talking about people in your circle. Even if you want them to wear a mask, but get them together at the pool or in the game room once a week would be more than sufficient. Get the kids together so they can interact.
That's what my big concern there was, watching and thinking that not only have they missed an entire school year and trying to learn online, but the socialization that happens when we're young, learning how to survive, how to stand up for ourselves, what boundaries are, all of sorts of things like that is missed.
And I'm sure you were aware of school refusals which has to do with social anxiety. That was huge in our society. And so this fed into that, where those kids now, it's just going to be so much harder to go back into the world that we were trying to prod them into because of its importance from the things that you just finished saying.
Wow. Well, Terry, this is fascinating. I know we could continue on because it's been an amazing time that has brought this irrational fear and anxiety to the forefront for sure. So we're just down to the last 4 minutes and I want people to have plenty of time. So share any last tips, where they can find the book and find out more about you.
You can find me and the book on my website, thefearcure.com. The book is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can also get it at thefearcure.com. With the book, there, my name is there, the phone number and the website, my picture.
Everyone, that's Terry Smith Pickens, and she is the author of the new book, The Irrational Fear Cure. Thank you so much, Terry, for joining us tonight to explain to us about irrational fear and anxiety.
My pleasure, Sharon. Let's do it again soon, and I hope a lot of people will get help from the book.
Let's get beyond this virus and any other irrational fears that we're taking along.
That's coming our way.
I think this virus has just made us aware of irrational fears more than
any other time. Absolutely.
Everyone, have a great week, whatever your adventures. Join me next week for another brand new episode. Be sure and pop over to Understanding Autoimmune and Autoimmune Hour over at Facebook and check us out there, see what we're talking about there, as well as going to the website, which is understandingautoimmune.com. Terry's episode will be there along with the other 300 plus episodes we have. So there's something for everybody over there at understandingautoimmune.com. See you next week. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, "Sorry, I'm rambling," you say, "Thank you for listening." Join us at ProjectForgive.com, a free, non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenil and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenil.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there. Take a moment now to find a comfy spot. Wiggle about every nook and cranny to make sure you're comfortable in this spot. Shake out your fingers and wiggle your toes while you take some nice deep breaths and extend the exhale. Let it go with a sigh. That's right. Continuing to release any leftover little stressors of the day with a nice extended exhale. Coming to a place of complete comfort and relaxation. Letting go of all drama, all the need for drama. That's right. Just whisking it away. No longer needed. Doesn't have a place here. That's right. Just whisk it away. That's right. Oh, let it go with a sigh. No need for drama here. No need to accept others' drama. Just enjoying this place of solitude. Savor the colors and the textures and the patterns and just the quiet and comfort. On each extended exhale. Notice how it feels to be without drama. Oh, just lovely, that's right. Open and spacious without drama. That's right. Knowing that you can take the same feeling of open and spacious, no drama, no need for drama. Right now, back into the real world. That's right. Integrate this feeling of no drama, of relaxation, open and spaciousness, and take it back into the present moment. Right now, alert and aware. That you can call on this feeling at any time and carry it with you at all times. That's right. Alert and aware, eyes wide open and ready to begin your day without drama and with that open and spacious feeling. Oh, welcome back.